I push her out a window and make sure she's dead on the ground below, but right now she's back as this honeypot that I don't know how to explain to Mr. Bruce Wayne right here.
And what did you write down about?
Oh, I wrote, this is where we see Keaton's wanna-do-it eyes.
About how the chaos needs to end, and then his baby gets taken.
Oh, this is the introduction of the Penguin to the public.
Right. Now, he is already at this point. He's working with Shrek. We know this. This is audience information.
Ooh.
And so the baby gets taken by a clown, and the clown goes down to the sewers.
Don't hurt me, Mr. Penguin.
Which is interesting, because the manhole is uncovered. So someone had to uncover that manhole, and nobody seemed to notice.
Nobody noticed the Penguin flippers opening. Like, he's like, let me do this myself. Yeah. He's got so many minions.
Yeah. And so he goes down there. He gives the baby to the Penguin, and the Penguin gives the baby back to the mayor. And he's like, I just want to find my family. I just want to know why they did what they felt like they had to do. And then the lights flash, and he's like, oh, no, it's too bright, because I've been living in a sewer my entire life. And and this is the first moment where I noticed that Bruce Wayne is, in my opinion, he's kind of moved by the fact that the Penguin just wants to find his family.
He's glued to the TV. And what I've written down, and I should probably not refer to my notes as the thing I wrote down when I watched it the first time before I watched it the second time, I was like, okay, so I know he's supposed to be the greatest detective in the whole world, right?
Right. That's what they tell us.
Okay. So he's supposed to be the greatest detective of all time, but like, he's glued to the screen, and Alfred's like decorating the Christmas tree. He's like, why don't you turn that off, sir? And he's just like, I'm looking at it, and I'm Keaton, and I'm looking at it, and I am Keaton, and I'm looking at it, and it's very interesting, and I'm very Keaton right now. That's fantastic, but dude, there's no reason why you should give two shits about this guy, but he does.
Well, to be fair, the Penguin is talking about just wanting to find his family, and for anybody who doesn't know the origins of Batman, Bruce Wayne's parents died in front of him.
So did you think that, like, he felt a kindred with the Penguin?
That's what I felt. Like, he was like, hey, this guy just wants a family. Yeah, I have a family, but if I thought for one second that I didn't know what happened to my parents, I'd be looking for them too.
Okay, I'm with you on that, but like, it felt like that I had to take a breath with the whole greatest detective thing, and that he would just naturally be drawn to the story of the Penguin. I didn't feel like this familial relationship of him, like, going from his own family's tragedy to this family's tragedy of abandonment. So when he, like, totally engaged, I'm like, you live in a town where it's like, there's the circus gang, and there was probably a Joker before, and then what about Two-Face and other villains that happen in the lexicon that I don't freaking remember that probably predate this moment by so freaking much that you're just like, sad Penguin man, and he's like super engaged all at once.
So for you, it took you out of the movie a little bit, because there's so many weird things that are going on in Gotham already. Why would this Penguin man trying to find his family stick out to Bruce Wayne?
Yeah, like, why should you as Batman give zero shits about Flipper Boy?
Right. Interestingly enough, that does take us into our next scene, which is people are just like, hey, he wants to find his family. So
what's the Penguin's name, Lydia? What's the Penguin's name?
Well, we don't find that out right now, right away. He goes to the Hall of Records and he goes looking for his parents. Mm. And I mean, I don't know what the process is. Like, if I don't know what my last name was, I don't know what the process would be to find my parents. But for him, it's going through a bunch of birth certificates and writing down names.
I think it's on day number 2 that he does this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on day number 3, after the Batman goes ahead and swings by the Hall of Records and sees Penguin taking down names.
He seems to be writing a lot for somebody just trying to find out who his parents were.
Right. Right.
He's got a whole lot of legal pads.
Right. Now, so the scene right after he's looking for his parents, we see him figuring out who his parents are. And he's at a grave site.
We're at the cemetery after he's collected all of this data that we don't know what it is.
How he would come to the conclusion that his name is Oswald Cobblepot is beyond me. Maybe Paul Reubens' last name, maybe his character, isn't actually Cobblepot. Maybe it's
Oswald Cobblepot?
I was thinking Pottlepot.
No, it's Cobblepot. I wrote it down.
I know, but how do we know that? What are the steps? Like, if you need to...
To be fair, the opening scene, the gate said Cobblepot.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
No, that's okay. I only watched it twice today. And then he turns, okay, he does this really dramatic thing where he like walks up to the grave. This is, Batman says it though. He says, Keaton's like, I think you already knew who his parents were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he had some, he was up to something else in the
Hall of Records.
Hall of Records. So now he's at the cemetery. He makes this big show of laying down two roses. He says the names of what's his butt and Esther.
Well, he's, I don't think he says the names of his parents.
He doesn't say that loud. I read them off a gravestone.
Yeah, yeah. But he's just like, I found who my parents were. I was their number one son, but they treated me like number two.
Perfect.
Which makes me wonder, did they have more bird children?
No, he just said that they treated him like...
Yeah, but what if he had siblings out there?
I mean, a number three is a very terrible thing.
My original thought, which kind of made you laugh, was, were they afraid of having any more bird people?
Okay, so like the really sad part of me is like, birth defects are fairly rare, and if she laid off those freaking martinis, maybe she could have said it was normal. So my note right before Wednesday is like, this is one night. So we've made it like a day and a half, and mm-hmm. now we're on night three. Yeah. We're day three.
Yeah, and after he talks and says that he found his parents, then he, you know, tells the people, and everybody's happy. And a woman, like, before day three, like, this is probably the evening of Oswald Cobblepot figuring out who his family is, a woman is walking alone and gets grabbed by a bad guy and pulled mm-hmm. into a dark alley. Mm-hmm. And Catwoman saves her and dispenses some advice that sounds like personal reflection. She pretty much, I can't remember what she says directly, but she pretty much is like, seriously, you didn't need a Batman to save you. The power was inside of you all along. And then leaves via backflips, which is the best way to exit a scene.
Yes. I was like, when did she get so good at backflips?
She was good at racquetball. All sports people are good at athletics. I mean, talk about football players. They can do backflips. I'm mm-hmm. telling you. I know a lot about sports. I know sports ball. No, I don't.
I can play a mean game of checkers, but I'm not going to enter a Tron tournament anytime soon.
I can lift over 60 pounds.
Mm,
yeah.
Get it, girl.
I know. I need to start lifting more weight so I can do backflips out of dark alleys. She's a cat woman. All cats can backflip. I think we got a cat. We got a couple of cats here.
They're very good at backflips. Yeah. Yeah. So, Wednesday morning. Keaton meets with Shrek.
Yeah. Bruce Wayne meets with Max Shrek. And they have this nice little exchange about the power plan. And
ironically, Bruce just throws the plan at him across the like open desk table. And that makes me super mad for like no good reason.
He has a table, a circular table that is pretty much a donut because it has nothing in the middle.
And they sit across from each other, not next to each other. Like real human beings.
Yeah. And so Bruce Wayne's like, your power plan is stupid. And Shrek says, Bruce Wayne is stupid. And then Bruce says, well, the Penguin is bad. And Shrek says that Bruce is mean. Like, these are literally my notes because that's kind of how the entire dialogue between Shrek
it's
and Bruce
really
sound.
Not, as far as dialogue goes, it's not the sharpest peg that we've found in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But that's okay because there's a lot of great lines later on.
Mm-hmm.
And then Selena walks in and then nobody
cares. Right when Shrek's like,
if my secretary was here,
I'd have her escort you out right now. And she's like, hello.
And then he's like,
And Bruce Wayne is immediately like, I don't like what that chick look like right now.
Shrek is like, why can't the people I kill just stay buried?
I push her out a window and make sure she's dead on the ground below, but right now she's back as this honeypot that I don't know how to explain to Mr. Bruce Wayne right here.
And what did you write down about?
Oh, I wrote, this is where we see Keaton's wanna do it eyes.
It's beautiful.
He's like looking at her like she is like something he wants to spread on a cracker.
Mm-hmm. I like to think that, like, if Shrek was still in the office. Okay, so Selena escorts Bruce out.
Got a fantastic repartee.
Yeah.
Like, and we really talked about this earlier, that, like, they have a fantastic chemistry going on through this entire film. And I mean, mm-hmm. not lots of times is it something that I appreciate.
Honestly, I love both of these actors so much. I kind of find it hard that anybody would not have good chemistry with either Michael Keaton or Michelle Pfeiffer.
I could see Michael Keaton falling pretty flat, but she is just, like, engaged. And he's, like, totally on board. And I'm like, me too.
Anyway, so she escorts him out and he kind of asks her out on a date. Like, I wish I wrote this down.
She goes, I've watched it a couple times. He's like, I'm listed. He's like, I'm interested.
And she's like, I'm working. And he says, I'm leaving.
Because the elevator door closes in his face. Yeah.
I like to think, though, that she went back to work with Shrek for the rest of the day. And, like, throughout the entire scene, she's making things, like, he's like, oh, did you cut your trip short because of your head injury? And she's like, it's not entirely amnesia. And then she runs through some different things, like, including how she flashed a kid back in, like, grade school or something.
Yeah, she does.
And then she mentions that he's dead.
Yeah, she just deadpans so much. But, like, if she did go back for the rest of this, is when Keaton was in the room.
Yeah.
After Keaton's escorted out, if the rest of the day he was just like, Selena, bring me a cup of coffee, she's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Shrek, we were out of milk. Apparently somebody drank it all. Like, the rest of the day, she should just be giving him all day long.
I mean, that's like if your boss pisses you off and you are too important to fire because he shoved you out of a window and you survive, you are allowed to give him or her. You know, maybe you have a crappy female boss. That's also possible. It's very, very possible to have a crabby female boss.
Let's just admit that all bosses are terrible.
Not all bosses.
No, let's just say that all bosses. No, they don't want to be, but they are all terrible.
All right. I'll go ahead and say okay, that. Anyway, thanks for
yes-anding me on that.
So at no point are we going to be like, are we going to do our own shipping of merchandise? Is that what's going to go
on?
We're
going to be our own boss, and then we'll just hate ourselves.
Oh, my self-loathing.
I mean, it's already in place.
Yeah. It works out so well. Also, it means we don't have to give big bonuses out to anyone but ourselves.
Ourselves and Jonathan for editing all of this.
Bullshit. It's like he's definitely in there.
Oh, poor Jonathan. Okay.
So the next scene, we see Oswald at home working as Shrek comes up and he sees Oswald writing something at his desk.
This is day number five.
Day number five.
As far as we can tell, the timeline is a little blurry. Bless Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag. Bless Burton.
And Shrek comes up and tries to get Oswald to come out.
He's got a surprise.
Ladies and gentlemen, he has a surprise.
For the Penguin Man.
And this is the moment where I kind of had to take a week off because I was so floored by this. But Shrek lures the penguin out with fish wrapped in paper.
Please, come with me. Until like two episodes ago. I don't know how
two episodes.
Well, if it was like the third episode of like the last one, and then that's the one before the like it's the math is wrong, but here's the last
the last recording we did was the end of Tusk. And there was something interesting about the end of Tusk that kind of syncs up with this movie.
I mean, if you like correlation but not causation, then follow us down this rabbit hole. There is a fish wrapped in paper.
And it is used
as an offering
to lure out a half-human animal man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let that sink in.
Just breathe it in. Breathe it out again. Breathe it in and breathe it out again.
This is the world we live in, ladies and gentlemen. So Oswald gets lured out with a fish. And Shrek takes him downstairs to, what is that?
Like, a surprise.
Surprise. The surprise being, I want you to run for mayor.
And we're on day...
I think we said it was day five.
Oh, I said day number five is creepy button pinning.
Oh, so it's day four.
Yeah, day four is Bruce meeting. Day five is creepy button pinning.
Would it be the same day?
No, I think it's the next day.
Okay, so it's day four? Okay. So Oswald comes down and Shrek's like, hey, I want you to run for mayor. And Oswald's like, I don't think that's possible because we're in December. Duh. And
don't elections happen in November?
And Shrek's like, oh, well, you know, doesn't really matter. Don't worry about that.
He's just thinking that he can do a recall because he's got enough votes through their company that they established earlier. So it doesn't matter the timeline because he can control that timeline.
Right. And so Oswald gets introduced to a couple of campaign planners, one of which is played by
the chick from SNL.
She was also on Third Rock from the Sun.
Her name is that one lady from that thing.
I know that. Jan Hooks. Anyways, so she and Steve Whiting.
Only in this one scene.
And they go ahead and try and convince him of different things, having different gloves on his hands.
Well, we can deal with that later since he gets all super mad while he's trying to eat a fish and she's trying to put gloves on him.
Right. And then the other guy is just like, hey, they don't have a lot of mirrors down in the sewer. And then Penguin's all like, well, it could be worse. My nose could be gushing blood. And everybody laughs, even though it's not that funny of a joke. And then Penguin bites his nose off.
Clear, like the most horrifying imagery of the entire film. He bites his nose and we are all just aghast.
Yeah. kind of goes through, and Shrek eventually convinces Oswald, which, you know, happens a lot throughout this movie, where Oswald is in the middle of something, has a plan, and Shrek goes ahead and tries and steers him off course.
You know what he does? What happens is that Oswald gets super sexual about, like, so many things. Oh, I just can't stand Penguin as a sexualized, like, I want everyone to own their own sexual identity.
He owns his own sexual identity in this movie.
But it is super disgusting.
It's kind of in this, like, domineering way.
Oh, he just, like, he's like, I'd like to fill her. I'm like, it's
And so but he's, you know, he goes from, like, I don't want to do this, to sexual deviant, to, that be the right word? Never mind.
It's deviant enough.
Yeah. And two, like, oh, okay, fine. I'll be mayor. And
we have to make the Batman the bad man.
Well, no, this is a different scene.
Oh.
Yeah. This is the scene right before the chaotic streets where Batman is, like, fighting all of Penguin's unknown henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the following scene is exactly that. It starts out with the poodle dropping off a bomb, and, like, I want this poodle so bad. Any animal that can lay mines or bombs just seems like such a solid pet to have.
Well, this is a shout out I put down for Madeline, because you see the dog enter with a bomb, drop off a bomb, and then leave the scene. So you have proof of life, which is credit to Tim Burton, who always wants the dog to live in one way or another in several of his films. Shout out to Frankenweenie, and shout out to that one dog, Zero, from Nightmare Before Christmas. He's like, the dog's gotta live, kinda.
Right. So you also see Batman show up, and, like, all of this, like, chaos and violence are entering into the streets. At one point, Batman programs a batarang to hit four people. One has a bazooka. One has, what are those?
Chucks.
Nunchucks. Thank you. Nunchucks? I'm assuming it's what popular media calls it. One has nunchucks. One has swords. And the other is the poodle lady with the dog that we saw lay in the bomb.
Her name is Anna Katerina. And she is labeled as the poodle lady in the credits.
And the batarang hits three out of the four. Can you guess which one catches the batarang?
I can guess because I saw the movie twice.
Okay.
It's the poodle.
Yeah, it's the poodle. So,
and she just gives him the side eye like, well, that's what you get.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Stop me? Are you going to try and kill my dog? No, you're in a Burton movie. That's not going to happen.
Mm.
And then we cut to Catwoman going into a Shrek store and destroying it.
She confronts, she's the most terrible cat burglar you've ever seen in your entire life.
She's also the loudest.
Yeah. She meets up with some security guards who she immediately dismissed, like the misogynist. She's, like, again and again, she's just like, are you a man being a man? Well, then F you and the CK, my friend, and right. Sends them off like nothing. Yeah.
And to be fair, they probably don't have to worry about catching her because they'll still get paid either way.
I cannot take my eyes off Catwoman whenever she's on screen in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said before that she defines, like, so much of what I think a woman should be and the power of a woman in a scene. And although it does not pass the
Bechdel test,
the Bechdel-Myers test, this movie, really, even in the conclusion, the final line is very much in line with feminism as being confronted by this patriarchy that she has to come up against again and again and again and again. They right. They kind of heavy-handed in there.
But that's the 90s for you, 90s feminism. It's still there, but anyways.
Mm.
And so Batman ends up meeting with Penguin, and they banter back and forth.
This is at minute 58 of our film.
The hero and the villain meet at minute 58. And then who should come in on minute 59 but
Catwoman? Because in minute 57, we watch Batman walk away from an explosion without looking. It's a minor explosion. And he shoves a henchman into a hole with, like, a bomb that he didn't manage to blow up Batman with. And then he meets the Penguin. And then the Catwoman flips into the scene with the mighty, mighty power of racquetball.
Meow. And then explosions!
That's her first line to the Penguin and the Batman. She goes, meow. And then, like, this huge explosion that far expands beyond what Batman has just experienced.
It's kind of a great way to make an entrance.
I'm not sad about it.
Yeah.
But then Does she flip away or something? And then Penguin's like, I saw her first. And then his parasol goes off and he flies up into the air.
Yeah. And she's climbing up a building as he's floating up. But I think he's not seeing where she's at, because she gets into a fight with Batman. She gets him off of a roof. And
life's a bitch, and now so am I.
And then he like throws something at her arm, and she
describes it as napalm later on.
Yeah. And so he hits her, and then she like falls off of a roof, and he saves her, kind of similar, because
he doesn't want her to die. That's not his MO.
And she doesn't seem to want him to die,
because that's not her MO.
Yeah. But she does hurt him after he saves her life.
They have that whole mistletoe banter that comes in later on.
That does come in later on. At this scene, like, she is looking for a weak spot, and he's just like really into it. And so when she finds it, he's just like, ah, and he's like backhands her into,
because she claws him. She's like, oh, where are you, real man? And she like trails her hand down his body until she finds the hole in his armor, and then she stabs him, and he's like, oh, and like backhands her off the building, and she falls into a truck
full of kitty litter,
and she goes, saved by kitty litter. And as like the 9-year-old me, I'm like,
as a teenager me, I love that line too. Even as an adult, I really like that line. It's kind of bad, but this movie has like for just as every line that hits, you have a line that misses.
It's true. Just like when she says a die for a die, like what? What is it? What does a die for a die mean at all?
Right.
It doesn't mean anything. So then
the next scene is the pin groping scene, I believe is what you called it. Yeah, the next scene goes into the Cobblepot HQ, and he's like talking about how bad the mayor is, and you know, turning happy homewives into cat women. And then there's a younger girl who's just like,
oh, it's
like
the creeping pin. Yeah. She's like, you're such a powerful and amazing man. And he's like, take a button.
And he pins it on her in like the worst way.
Let me just put it on you. And he like gropes her boob for a while, long time. Yeah. That's like very much all a tank girl and the kangaroo guy who like is just like, I made this one special one for you. And then he grabs her for a long time like that.
Yeah. And then Oswald goes up the stairs being like super horny, talking about how he needs to go out and touch people and grope them. And one of his henchmen call him the Penguin, and he says, my name isn't Penguin, my name is Oswald. And then he's like, Oswald, there's somebody here to see you.
Somebody here to see you. That's Vincent Scavilli again.
Yeah.
Rest
in
peace.
And so he goes ahead and talks. It's Catwoman. She's on the bed.
And she's got her cat with her, a little black cat. Super cute.
Yeah. And he has a bird in a cage. These are important because they come into play later in the scene.
Right. Because they go back and forth, and she's like, look, I need you to go after the Batman. And he's like, look, I'm trying to become mayor. And it's an interesting scene. It's just, it's very much about the dynamic between the two. It's not a super fast scene, I would say.
So they do banter back and forth, and Penguin says, yeah, we totally got something to go ahead and kill Batman. And Catwoman's like, no, we got to turn him into what he hates most, namely us. And Penguin's a little bit suspicious of her. Is like, you know, are you really, you know, like crazy, or are you just some messed up rich chick who hasn't actually had to struggle?
Yeah, he calls her sorority sister, and that totally sets her buttons off, because she's just like, are you being a sexist piece of shit right now? Because you know what? I'm gonna kill you. But first, I'm gonna kill your bird.
Also, first of all, she is not like sorority chick. She does not come from money. She has struggled, and we see that as the audience. But Michelle Pfeiffer puts a live bird in her mouth.
I mean, this is canon. She put live bird in her mouth. Then he's just like, oh, you gonna eat my bird? Because I have a thing for birds. Yeah. I'm gonna kill your cat.
Yeah. And when Michelle Pfeiffer lets the bird out of her mouth, he lets the cat go. Probably the cat goes in the same direction as the bird. So I like to think that maybe the cat got the bird.
I mean, let's just hope that. But then Michelle Pfeiffer's like, hey, you know what? I can only do against this guy. I can only play the sex card. So she proceeds to give herself a bath, and lo and behold, he goes along with her plan.
Do you think that she bathed herself? Because he seemed interested in the plan before she bathed herself.
I mean, tits for tats. It's either way. Doesn't matter.
So the next scene is the press conference where Oswald says, I challenge the mayor to relight the Christmas tree, and I hope that Batman shows up. And I mean, yeah, he's being pretty subtle with that, right? I mean, Oswald's being pretty subtle, like, I hope Batman shows up. It's very obviously it's a trap. The next scene.
Oh, by the way, the scene with the Catwoman and the Penguin ends with like flipper puppet theater,
right?
Where he makes like a bat out of his flippers, and I thought that's worth noting.
So Oswald challenges the mayor to relight the tree. Batman, he also challenges Batman to show up
as security,
right,
to keep the city safe.
And then the next scene is Bruce and Selina meeting up on the street, talking about everything that's going on.
Day number six, which I like to title Confessions to Rudolph. She's like, what are you doing? I don't even, who are you even? to this reflection in a storefront window where Bruce just happens to walk up behind her, because you know multimillionaires are always walking up behind random executive assistants.
They end up setting up a date at 5, which is a little bit early for a date.
Oh, it's 6 o'clock, Lydia. Please, let's be accurate. He says 5 first, but then he's like, no, 6. Oh, which makes sense because they cut it really close later on.
Yeah, okay. And so you see after that the tree lighting taking place.
But in the meeting, they're kind of watching the show while they're having this banter. And then Bruce Wayne is just like, do you think I'm a Norman Bates or a Ted Bundy type? And then they still end up making out.
Well, that's like the following scene where they are at Wayne Manor on their date. And Bruce is like talking about like his past loves and how the love interest from the last movie had a difficulty with dealing with these two sides of him.
He has a duality about him. And she's like, well, what about that? And he's like, well, they're two truths.
Which seems like, are you leading a second life?
Yeah, kind of doing. But then the news shows that this guy, Commissioner Gordon, is like second line of the movie. Is just like, this is a batarang we found in the face. It's got blood all over it from this Ice Queen who's missing. So that's a thing. But take a good look at this batarang. But I think it might be Batman.
But he does begin saying this is all circumstantial evidence.
Because like, you're whipping out your circumstantial evidence in front of like the press.
I don't think that's how police procedures work.
That's not how police work.
Maybe in Tim Burton's world.
So they both make excuses because they both have to run off to the tree lighting. Bruce is like, can you just be like, I love you, but like not that I love you. And she's like, can you like just tell him that I love you, but I don't like, I mean, like, could you just tell him a dirty limerick? And Alfred's like, a good one just came to mind. And then I tried to think of every dirty limerick that I knew, and I know like two.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Yep, it ain't right.
Yeah. And okay, so then they go to the
but now they're both getting dressed.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot that. So Bruce goes in and he has like several Batman outfits.
Yes, and I counted something like 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 Batman outfits.
Bruce, obviously being super rich, has a better place to go ahead and change.
He has a bat cave, for f- sake.
Yeah. What does Selina change into?
In her beater car.
And this is what I love about Tim Burton and his movies. He takes something very outrageous, like superheroes changing, and applies it to something that's so unbelievably mundane. Because Selina is driving in her car and she is changing into her Catwoman outfit. And there's a reason why she wore a skirt. And I don't think it was just because she was hoping to get lucky. I think it was also because she knew she had a second job that she had to get to and she was going to have to change in her car. Just saying.
Okay, so the tree lighting opens and the mayor is speaking. The current mayor is speaking into the microphone and the microphone squeals. And I thought that it would be important to note that the squealing in the microphone to show incompetence trope is played there.
Oh, cool. I did not know that. Mm. Batman also takes his car there, locks it, and the Penguin's gang comes in and apparently knows how to hack the Batmobile.
Yes, but also under the pretense of stealing the Ice Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Because Batman is distracted by clearing his name to save the Ice Queen, who he easily sees in a side window off of a building. So they show a scene where the troop is like hacking his Batmobile with like no problem whatsoever. Right. And he's unalerted in any way. And he's like, look at the Ice Queen through that window. I better go save her.
Yeah.
And he runs in and she's like, no, no, it's no big deal. I'll tell them all that some fishy bird type person just abducted me.
Yeah. Bad jokes ensue. Like Catwoman comes up and attacks him. And then you get like some really bad jokes, like Batman throwing her to the floor and saying it's high in fiber. And
oh no, that she should eat more fiber because she hasn't eaten all day. So she'd feel more full if she... Sorry, nutrition jokes. Sorry. Weight loss person. She's like, I haven't eaten all day, except she just had dinner with Bruce Wayne. So that doesn't make any fucking sense. But that that he was like, if you ate more fiber.
She takes her up to the roof, and, you know, Batman follows as we're seeing this get intercut with the Penguin's gang, mm-hmm. you know, hacking and putting some weird stuff in his car, like this very circusy antenna.
It looks like a gumball.
Yeah. And so this Ice Princess is standing on a ledge. And instead of, like, immediately, as soon as no one's around, getting down from like that
stepping
ledge.
Stepping down from the ledge with yeah. your stiletto heels, girl. Get it.
Right, right. Or just, you know, like, seeing there's a huge difference between the roof in comparison to the ground. So maybe I should just go ahead and tip over onto the other side. It doesn't matter. Batman's like, oh, well, just don't.
He tells her to stay still. I'd have been like, get down.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm just reasonable like that. So the Penguin mm-hmm. shows up and he throws a parasol like he do.
And when it opens, there are bats that come flying out.
Trained bats that swarm her and compel her off the roof.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking about this. If you stuffed a bunch of bats into a parasol and then you threw the parasol like a long dart, wouldn't the bats get agitated at the first thing that was close by? So
I think they'd just fly away. But maybe. I'm not a trained bat.
That's true.
And I'm not Tim Burton in 1992 either. I'm sorry to disappoint.
No, it's not that. I'm not saying that you have to be. I was just thinking, like, logic. Would that make sense? And maybe it wouldn't.
What really Tim Burton is getting at is that we need to have more interaction between Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah, because the Ice Princess falls off the ledge. She lands, oddly enough, on a button that lights the Christmas tree, and then you have all these other bats flying out of the tree.
More trained bats that just swarm around the square for like the next 45 minutes.
Did you survive part 2 of our unsettling cinematic review applauder? Have we left you out in the cold, or are you down for a catnap? Because we have one final segment to cover in Tim Burton's Batman Returns. Hey, this is your audio engineer and snoot-nibbling mayoral candidate, Jonathan, reminding you to cast your ballot on Election Day. Then, return to us November 13th for Part 3. Do you have some time on your flippers? Why not head to patreon.com, search for Shocked and Applaud, and become an official applauder, with incentives to support us in our wily and peculiar ways. You can also email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com or visit shockedandapplaud.com for additional blog posts and listener updates. You may be shocked to know that we rely on you, as an applauder, to share, like, and subscribe to our posts and episodes. We don't use third-party advertising to generate revenue. We're 100% supported through Patreon. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.